You started doing this in what, 06? So you've had a long time.
I've been around a long time.
Get used to it.
I would say 20, what are we now? 2023. So Apprentice, which was like way back when, I was 28. And what am I now? 48, 20 years of being around.
Whereas I've only just started this. I had a YouTube channel. I did it just to promote my academic research. Or whatever, yes. And then suddenly now I'm a
YouTube sensation.
The more they've got me this Substack was even better, and they've got all. I'm suddenly like, you know, they're kitting me out in clothes
and requiring you to do all sorts of things. Do you love it?
I don't know. It's this change. It's so sudden and so dramatic. And it made me a bit sort of depressed and down, actually. I don't feel in control of my own life.
And it's, I think also much of it operates at some level of a veneer.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas presumably before, with your academic work, that's at a level that is deep, way into the oceanic trenches of life.
Well, I guess that with the channel, there's a sort of exaggerated version of myself, which they like.
Of course they do, the mad professor.
Right, that's partly me, it's maybe 80% me.
But not all of you.
No. And so I have to put this on, yes. Get into it.
Yes.
And that's what they're wanting, and it's not, and I'm sort of...
Yes, I get
it. I presume it's the same with you.
I get it entirely. So I've been lucky, fortunate, that what was originally bought into by, as the hate figure idea... So this monster woman, the bitch, who'll say anything to anyone and everything she says is vile and therefore she must be thrown out and therefore she must be spat at. That would have been exhausting to carry on, although it was 15 years or so of that. But now, luckily, it's much more aligned with actually me, because I'm able now to talk about my own life or talk about my children or my husband or things that make up me, the quieter me.
Well, why couldn't you talk about the quieter you then?
I would never, because I had to protect them with everything I had. I was just this one. Most people never imagined I had kids. A, because I was too awful to have kids, and B, because I never spoke of them once in my life, nor anything private. But I do totally understand what you're saying, because the thing that maybe some people want from you, people who engage with you or engage you, they want the mad professor, but they want that at an extreme end of that as well. The more extreme of that you are, the more they want. But for you, you might wake up somewhere over here mentally or emotionally. And so to put on the character, it is the pantomime. And that's tiring. But then,
it is tiring doing it. That you've got to, that there's this, you've got to wind yourself up.
Yeah, bring it.
Bring it. Perform. Do your little performance. Do your little performance. And then piss off.
Yes,
and
that's piss off
and
as
that,
well.
And that, yeah, and that's why I was irked this morning when I got here and the producers weren't here yet. They were late. And it was just Dankula hanging around outside. And I was like, for Christ's sake, my job is to do the performance.
Yes, absolutely.
I shouldn't have to organise this, be ringing people, be whatever. I'm here to do the performance.
Yes, and Dankula presumably turned up like a good soul.
To do the performance.
Because when we say we'll do something, I don't speak for all of us, when we say we're going to do something to do the thing, the performance, we do it. Mm. We turn up 10 minutes before and we do it. So when people let you down, it's incredibly frustrating because they don't have to bring what you have to bring.
No, and that's what why I started to understand the concept of what's that word? A rider, a yes. rider. The idea that as a celebrity, or I'm not a celebrity, you are as a no. minor celebrity. You want certain
things. If you
want it to go well for me, I need these things.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And the rider notion always sounded tremendously flippant and ridiculous.
Prima donnery.
Yes,
prima donnery.
15 white doves. But if your rider is, you'll be there half an hour before I am, you'll be there half an hour afterwards, you'll be there to do this, that and the other, you'll be there to ensure setup goes smoothly. That's the sort of rider I have on shows. It's about being able to do the tech check, sound check, at the time I want. So exactly that. But I think the other thing that you said, which is really true, is, and then you have to piss off. And it's like, so for, I don't want to talk about guys you work with, but with media, your job is to perform in that, be dressed right, the right socks, the right everything, be immediately mad professor, you know, shorthand for whatever you are, and then immediately piss off, say nothing, go away, and don't belong to anyone. And that's also a really weird thing, because that's not human.
So how do you react to that?
Yeah, having things, knowing that that's sort of like accepting that as a really unkind side of media and having things beyond that, right? So my kids, my dogs, my walking in the woods, being quiet on my own and being happy with that. For a long time, I used to think I belonged, you know, I was part of the team, like I was on staff, and I like being part of a team. I like being on staff, but you realise you're not.
Yeah.
You're an accessory.
You're a performer, and if you don't do it right, eventually they'll drop you.
Yes. Or if Mad Professor's your thing, but one day Mad Professor is too mad in a way that's not approved of, you'll be cancelled for it. So it's walking a tight line. And but once you, for all the outrage that goes well, that's approved
of. It's the level of cancellation.
Yes.
So there's a degree to which, so with yourself, for example, when you used to write for the Daily Mail.
Yes.
Or Mail Online, sorry. And you, I would read it every time. And then you went slightly too far. Just slightly. Yeah.
Too far,
now, frankly,
too real.
Frankly, it strikes me that the sub-editor should have noticed that and said, no, Katie, we're not running this.
Yeah, whereas the subbies are going, this is great, this is great. And they'll message you maybe in the day, say, great column, great file. You know, so it goes, as you will know, through desk after desk. It has to go to 3 or 4 desks before it hits the paper or the page or wherever. So those guys run for cover and you're disposed of. So I always said, you know, this idea that your employers will love you for as long as they love you when the noise suits them. But when the noise is too much in the other direction, you are immediately, it's just like throwing out the trash.
Mm.
And that's obviously a weird thing to get used to as well. That's a weird notion.
Well, the other thing, of course, we were talking a minute ago about the idea that you have to put on this persona and so forth. But then there is a degree to which I am told that the viewer will like elements of us even talking about this, because there is almost this parasocial friendship. They want to get beneath the veneer. They want to feel that they know something intimate that is beyond the persona, which they know is a persona. But on the other hand, they love the persona and they want to see the persona. So it's this odd contradiction in the relationship. Which,
yeah,
they seem to have.
And I think that's where, I guess, for me, over this long time, now I'm in a really comfy place where I literally, and I think it's an age thing as well, you know, I lay it all out all the time in things that young people just recoil at because it's so embarrassing. I imagine admitting that. But now you reach a point where it is fine. So I've reached a lucky place where the sort of me and persona is the same, but people have gone from not everybody, and I'm not aiming for that at all, but people have gone from hating me with a passion to going, actually, she's a pretty funny girl and we need her right now. So it's been, for me, it's been a kind of a 180. It's a weird thing to suddenly be liked, not hated.
But you're on the telly less.
Not at all. I can't be on anything. I'm banned from everywhere still. Murdoch, anything to do with Murdoch? No.
Since the, yes. So you think that this is the change, that you can be more yourself because you haven't got to be this outrageous sort of, you know.
I'm just my, yeah. I was always that girl. Mm. I never said anything I didn't mean, didn't buy into. I've never had an opinion or expressed a view that I don't believe in. So it's been consistent, what you're talking about is the emphatic presentation of some of those things.
Well, saying, for example, you said on one occasion you'd be concerned about having your daughter go to a birthday party if she was invited by somebody called, like, Charmaine.
Yeah.
I mean, you
said, oh, 100%. Oh, and the thing about that is, say that gets, so that is still and will remain, even though it's been deleted from history, the most watched clip of all time on that show. I mean, the show is now imploded because, well, paedophiles never last long in TV land. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, they do.
They last a long time. Yes.
But there is, yeah, longer, and will return, funnily enough, with the redemption of the male, which is another thing we can discuss. But certainly the reason that goes on and lives on and still lives on now is because it sat in hard, honest truth of people. We know there are certain kids you don't want your kids anywhere near. And that's all it was. It was just a human truth that we try and protect our kids from some people's kids that we think, oh God, that woman and her kids. Everyone thinks it, no one can say it. And that's why you can't, if you just talk crap, you're a mad woman shouting at the moon, right? Mm. If it's not embedded in human nature, the stuff I was doing then.
It is. There is certainly names have become more diverse, and there's studies on this, and they have, as we've become a less group-oriented society. If you're more group-oriented, which is associated with being more middle class, I'm afraid, then you will probably name the child after family members, or use traditional names, or use names that are popular.
Yes.
And if you're more of an individualist, which is higher in psychopathic traits, which is, I'm afraid, associated with being working class, it's just true, then you will go for a name that's unique.
Chardonnay.
Chardonnay. Tiger Sky. That was the most extreme I
Destiny
came across.
Destiny, I always liked. When the mother was like, Destiny! Yeah! You're like, I think we know where her future is.
I think her destiny is written in the...
Written large in the stars.
In the stars, yes.
Tiger. Same with Belle, right? The ugliest baby you ever saw in your whole life. And the mother named it Belle. Mm. And you were like, did you not want to wait and see first?
Princess. Crystal.
And this is all it was. It was a human truth. You know, I did the school runs. I try to avoid them at all costs. I find other school mothers to be horrific. Mum's Net's just having a bad time on Twitter. But I find other mothers to be horrific at all times. But there would always be the biting kid. There would always be the kid that smelt slightly of wee. And there was always the fat kid from the fat mum with a football shirt. It's just the universal truth. Yeah.
Yes, even in Finland where I live, it's noticeable. They match fat mother, fat kid.
They're not fat people there in Finland, are they? They're not many.
Not compared
Finnish
to here.
People not, don't
not,
do fat.
Not compared to here.
No.
They're always behind. They're always about 20 or 30 years behind what we do in terms of multiculturalism, in terms of degeneracy. I mean, I didn't lock my front door. I mean, it's safe.
That's so
in
gorgeous.
Oulu.
Mind you live in, like, you know, for people that don't
well,
know.
Well, you were in the centre when you were there, right? And so a 20-minute walk from there in a sort of 1950s wooden house.
So if we could just explain to people, though, that don't know Oulu, give them a sense of where it is geographically, just so we're
northern
clear.
65 degrees north, northern Finland, opposite Sweden.
Go up a bit more. Go colder.
Colder. You're
icy,
there.
Darker,
very cold. Very darker. Cold. Not as dark as, not Lapland, though, below Lapland. Hour from Lapland. Hour from the Arctic Circle.
An hour. So you sit there casually going, yeah, I don't lock my door. Like you live in, you know, inner city Bradford. You live literally on the Arctic Circle.
It's a city of 200,000 people, though. I mean, it's a city.
I know, but it's full of people in lots of knitwear.
That is true.
It's hard to burgle in knitwear.
It's,
I've tried.
It's cold. It's cold.
It's freaking cold.
And half the year, it doesn't get dark. So there's no knitwear there.
Why do you live there in a hut?
My wife's Finnish. It's a wooden house, but it's my wife's finished. That's how I ended up there. And I was finishing my PhD, and she was working. She'd moved in. We were living together, and she'd got this job as a chaplain in a church in Scotland, chaplain. And then she got a job as a vicar in Oulu, and I moved.
You two are the cutest.
Moved over there, yeah. That was it.
Isn't it strange how on this whole planet there's somebody else that's supposed to be ours? Like someone for us. Isn't it the strangest thing?
It's the Platonic idea, the Platonic hermaphrodite, that before time we were all hermaphrodites and we were misbehaving, and so Zeus divided us in two, and then you spend the rest of your life looking for the other part of hermaphrodite,
you.
The other part of you. I was going to look at that with you in a minute, actually.
Oh, well, let's
before,
do that.
But all right, before I do... Now, before we continue with our video, I want to share something very exciting with you. If you have been following my content for a while, then you will surely have heard of The Bell Curve by Charles Murray and Richard Herrnstein. The Bell Curve was one of the most important books in IQ research ever, and even though it came out in 1994, it remains a milestone in this area of research. It actually got both of the authors cancelled because they were not prepared to be silent about the important issue of race differences in IQ, which of course are largely genetic. Now, the only real problem with the bell curve is that it's almost 1,000 pages long. none of your internet TikTok generation has the attention span to cope with this. But now you don't have to, because you can easily listen to a detailed summary of the bell curve and its core ideas in just 20 minutes on Leagent.com. Leagent also has shorts and many other based books, such as my own, The Past is a Future Country, and many, many more. You can listen to all of them in about 25 minutes while you're on your commute to work, while you're working out, or whatever you guys do when you're not watching my videos. So go to Leagent.com and sign up with my promo code of TJH for a 10% discount. One thing that interested me is that you... by the way, it was going so well, the conversation, that I didn't bother with the introduction.
No, we don't need to.
Don't bother. We won't bother.
No. If you don't know who we are, just look us up.
I didn't bother
with
the hello, 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 welcome to Johnny Heretic.
I don't think this is necessary. I think you know, as if you were already in the sea. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Everyone can join us in the sea.
I felt like that. I felt like it was just like they're joining in on something that had already started, which it did.
I think that's rather more gorgeous, to be honest.
Yeah, who
needs an introduction, you know?
Exactly. I like the word gorgeous in that context.
Gorgeous, because it's long.
Exactly.
There you go. Look, more vowels.
What's the word? Yeah. It's a very word. It's a Monty Python sketch. They talk about tinny words, don't they?
It's got real... It's unctuous is a great...
It's like the word lugubrious.
Yes, lovely, darling. Just long vowels. Mm. I think it's because there's a German out there.
Yeah, I know. We've had a lot of
We're soothing ourselves with oohs.
Soothing ourselves back into some romance words.
Yeah.
So you're from... it's interested me, though, we talk about the contradiction between the persona and the real person, or at least the nuanced difference. And so you have this persona of being outrageous, obviously. And I was quite interested in a couple of things. So, for example, you're from Devon.
Yeah.
You're born in Devon. Now, I would think that an outrageous person would think, I'm going to go to university, But you go to university in Devon.
Yes.
Why not go somewhere else?
And that definitely happened, and you're completely right. And actually, that is a very specific way that I feel a lot of the time, on a regular basis, I get that.
So why was there no university?
It happened earlier. So there was convent school, nuns, Sister Bede, Sister Philomena, deeply evil women. I would always say never trust a nun because of their deep-seated level of malice. So convent school,
What did they do?
It's a bizarre notion, is it not, that nuns can teach, you know, just because you wear a habit and you enjoy a bit of God-based stuff. Does that mean you can teach
kids? They have theological education as part of their training, we're not.
It just feels exaggerated to me that you think a whole school full of nuns that their parents think, and they thought, put them with nuns, that will keep them good, right? That will keep them on the straight and
narrow. So are your parents Catholic?
No.
Right.
So, but their mum went to the school, her mother before that, one of those things.
Ah.
Nothing, you know, lovely came out of there, fine, great. But then I was like, mah! So I went to the local tech, 2,000 kids. Probably half of them didn't know their own parents, straight into the melee to do A-levels rather than stay on at the nice school with the nice people and the nice kilts that we had to sew up back in the day. So we had kilts as our uniform, even though we weren't vaguely Scottish, and we had to sew them up to the knee.
That must be a Catholic thing. I went to a Catholic boys' school, you see, even though I'm not Catholic. And
The same.
Yeah, although I have quite positive memories of it, to be honest. And there were no monks there. It was just Catholic Irish people.
So, yeah, maybe that.
Friendly Irish.
And they weren't women.
Well, some of them were women, but they were friendly Irish women. And then the sister school, which was because we had mixed sixth form.
Ooh.
The headmistress of the girls was, yes, they'll be 16. So I think it's about appropriate that they should start to
mingle.
Yeah. They wore kilts. Same thing.
So they love a kilt. A convent school loves a kilt. And ours, we were dictated to sew it. Because you will appreciate, or people, if they're not familiar with kilts, will appreciate they're a long piece of fabric that flaps in a sort of gamely Scottish way. But we had to sew ours up in case we would flap and deliver our
sexuality
area to the local passing state school boys. So I went to a tech college. I only managed to do 1 year of A-levels before I went, and I left for Australia for a year.
Okay.
So I guess the reason I ended up back at Exeter was that I'd already gone for a year, came back, didn't fit anywhere because I was kind of grown up beyond
my
days.
Did you apply anywhere else?
Oxford. Okay. I sat the entrance exams for Oxford and got through to interview. But I applied for those on my own at this tech college that was basically hairdressers and car mechanics as its sort of focus. And I remember being hauled into the headmaster's office at the tech college and being given a massive bollocking for applying for Oxford University without telling anyone because now they would have to invigilate the exams. So that's I passed selfish. That. And it wasn't until I got to the interview that I realised that you're supposed to do a bit of something different to get to Oxford interview, not just turn up as some bint from Devon. So I failed spectacularly.
Yes, and so you went to Exeter.
Exeter.
Even though that's where you're from. Did you live with your parents or did you live at Halls?
No, Halls, obviously. Yeah, never with my parents.
Okay. But then another bit of a thing that was interesting was that you, again, it doesn't necessarily seem congruous with the outrageousness, is wanting to be in the army.
Yes.
Well, how is that? You're outrageous, but you have to follow orders and do what you're told, you know.
Yes, but it's very specific, army, military orders. So things that make sense to me. So it's not about breaking rules that make sense or breaking things that are disciplined and powerful and freeing, because the rules of military are designed such that, as I'm sure you appreciate, mission command in its earliest phasing was designed such that you could pass simple commands on to people less intelligent than yourself or less capable, the troops, the squaddies, the men, and give them simple instructions so that should something happen to you, they were able to continue with the attack on the hill because they knew the aim. I mean, it's basic principles of life and it makes every sense. And I love those kind of rules. I love black and white, yes, no, this or that. The standard is this. You meet it, you pass. You don't meet it, you fail.
Yes.
I love that stuff.
I love
that. So even failing Oxford, when I go back, I was at the Oxford Union debating chamber the other day. That is my biggest message I have for those guys is keep this place. It needs to be prestigious. It needs to be the highest of the high. Do not be allowing everyone in. It dilutes everything. So I love binary choices that are here's the bar, hit it or don't. And so military rules make every sense in that regard. Sandhurst, go in as one of 30
girls. Something
autistic
about it almost, isn't there? Beautifully autistic about it.
And to the extent to which I'm on the spectrum is not debated that I'm on it. I'm certainly at some obscure end of a spectrum. My behaviour is odd. I'm not specifically female. I'm very masculine in the way I come across, and I have a frenetic way of thinking that most people find quite peculiar.
Yes, I feel I can sympathise in some of these ways. I like that is true. I like it to be black and white and clear. I hate lateness. I really hate lateness.
This is you and me.
And I hate people. I'll do something,
you have to do it.
I'll do it. I can't emphasize this enough. No matter what.
See, that's me.
Because that is what I said I do.
That's me.
Right? Yeah. And I was in like New York or something, and I was in Long Island, and I said to my friend in New Jersey, "I will meet you." And then I didn't understand how far Long Island was from Jersey City, and it would take an hour and a half there. An hour and a half. I didn't realise that.
No.
But I did it anyway. Did a 3-hour round trip to meet him for an hour, because that is what I
said
I do.
Yes. And that's specifically why rules like that. So we have, without having them laid down necessarily, specific rules in our life that then allow us to do things that other people, it would stress them out beyond belief. So someone messages me and says, "I'm in Rome, can you get here?" "Yes, I'll be there." And that means I'm going. So then I'll say to someone, "Oh, I'm going to Rome this day, because I am." And then you get the questions. And the questions that come are all detail. But when, but how, but why, but what you, what time is the thing, and when is the connecting thing? I don't know the answer to any of that. I just know I'm doing it. And to your point, and therefore I will it to happen. And that's the thing is I don't sweat the small stuff in any way, and in the way that you don't either. But there are things that I cannot tolerate, and one of them is lateness.
It's appalling.
And this other bizarre thing, like people, I felt a bit ill, so I didn't do it, or I didn't turn up. There is no I have no understanding for that, and therefore I appear very intolerant.
I have never done that, and on the only occasion that happened, it was somebody else that said to me, Ed, for God's sake, don't come, you're really, really ill.
Yeah, and you'll probably piss off people who are there because you look sick as a dog.
Right, but I said, well, I'm coming, because I said I would. Yeah. And I've had people that have been surprised by this. Ed, thank you for putting me as a co-author on that paper. I didn't expect it. Yeah. But I said I would.
Yeah.
Did you remember that?
Yes, I know. I know.
I did say that, you know. I can see that is, so you like the rules element of it.
That, yes, or the clarity that it
clarity,
gives you.
The clarity, yeah.
Because if you deal with people who are like this, it's actually incredibly freeing. Because if someone says, Katie, we want to book you for this date, it means it's happening. Mm. It doesn't mean a week before I'll get cancelled or postponed or this will change. It means it's happening. And so you're free to get on with stuff, because how much of your life is wasted by people who don't do what they said they would do or pretend to be something that they're not?
Or vacillate.
Vacillate, exactly. Just sort of swing around with...
Feel an emotion. And therefore say, oh, I can't come to this. I just can't.
Or I'm not doing so good.
That came after the agreement.
Exactly. So it is yours to own the not doing so good.
You didn't make the agreement and say, oh, except if I'm not feeling so good.
If I'm not doing so good.
Doing so good.
Yes, it's a modern phrase for I'm not doing so good. And you're supposed to go, oh, I hope you get on better. Whereas I can't do that. Oh. I have to just go own your shit. Own it.
Ed, you're not showing much empathy for me. No, I'm not. And I wouldn't expect you to in the same situation with me. No,
don't require more from me.
It wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And it's about that. So there's a lot that's the joy of life as you go through it is you learn about kind of your energy and holding on to it sometimes. And you don't have to allocate your energy out onto everybody, and especially not morons. So that element of me is absolutely consistent.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier when we were out there, when you called me a spastic, which I didn't mind because, I mean, I am a spastic. I literally have cerebral palsy. I was called spastic at school, and you learn to own it. Epilepsy.
Yeah.
She perks up at this. So how were you born with that, or was there some kind of accident, or what?
Were you dropped on your head?
Yes.
You strange.
Well, that's the kind of thing that happens, isn't it? That something set it off.
You strange fitting creature. You. So you were being a spastic, to be fair. I mean, you just sort of laid that out there like, oh, you called me a spastic, I was bullied at school, oh, what a nasty cow. But honestly...
No, I don't mean that at all.
But people, you just sort of scooping on in without bringing up the backstory, which is that I was teaching you to do a selfie, and if you're going to do a selfie, you have to start off as if you can do it, not come at it like... which is what you did, regardless of your conditions that no one sees. Epilepsy, no. So I... The truth of the matter is that I was perfect. No, I wasn't. But at about 18, I started to have these strange absences for no reason, a petit mal. And it wasn't called that because I didn't know what it was. I just knew that one minute I was there, next minute I would be, boof, but then I would come back and people would go, oh, you all right? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, fine, sorry, off with the fairies.
So you'd zone out?
You basically disappear for a moment. You're having a seizure, but nothing. You don't get an outward representation of it. You're just not there for a moment, and then you're back. And by the time you're back and someone's maybe noticed that you looked a bit weird, maybe your face went dropped, you can cover it. And I learned to cover that up really fast. And it was about the same time I applied to be in the military. I was sponsored through university by the intelligence corps. And these petit mal seizures were getting more and more aggressive. And so I am probably the only epileptic to make it to Sandhurst and make it through Sandhurst, because I hid all of my seizures for the whole time I was there because they were small enough for me to be able to do so.
And so this is just zoning out or petit mal. I hadn't heard that phrase, actually. For an increasing period of time.
Well, it's that they're more frequent.
Ah.
And I eventually got caught out because we were on the drill square, practicing for the passing out parade from Sandhurst, which is a big day where the royal family come and you pass out, and you, this drill that you do, this endless marching around the parade square in formation, it's epic to watch. It's an amazing spectacle to see. I mean, it's glorious, but we were rehearsing. I had a seizure. And I, if you're rehearsing on the parade square, you do not mess step by step. Everything is immaculate in time. And off I went. I just veered off.
Oh.
And so that was the point that the ears of the army medic went up. And from then on in, my dispatch from the Royal Military Academy, I just passed out of the academy. Thank God. Otherwise, the idea that I'd failed at the academy, I think, I'm not sure I would have survived that, the shame. But so I was discharged, medically discharged from the army, and subsequently my seizures became, you know, tonic-clonic seizures. So the real seizures people will...
No, I don't know. Tell me
remember.
About
them. Okay, so the big seizures that you can get, they start, they got worse and worse throughout my life. So by about the age of 30, bear in mind I've had two kids at this point, I've done The Apprentice, I've done other TV programmes. At night time, I would have these huge... shaking seizures that would dislocate one or both of my arms. My arms have been out of their sockets 42 times ish. I'd have to go into A&E or ER or emergency resus, have arms pulled back in because they don't just click back in. It's the reason people would be kind enough not to notice, but my teeth are out here because I fell on my face. I've taken my tongue off before. It's, you know, epilepsy. You just cut straight, you bite, your own body will bite your way through your own tongue, and your tongue has to be put back on, sewed back on.
What do they do? Preserve it in ice creams or something?
It's just hanging, they're disconnected, so they have to reconnect bits of your tongue together. I'm missing the edge bits still. But your body is so powerful. I mean, that's a positive spin on it, isn't it? It's amazing that you can bite your own tongue off and you can dislocate your own arms.
Right.
But all of this was going on behind the scenes through all of my life, and I still didn't tell anyone.
You have siblings?
I have a sister who doesn't have it.
Parents?
No one had it. It's just, it's a glitch in my, it was like a tumour-sized mass of uselessness in my brain that they went and got out.
Are you a younger sister?
Older. None of my children have it.
So that would, if none of your children have it, I mean, it implies it's some sort of environmental insult.
No, it was some sort of genetic malformation of my brain.
Yeah.
I blame my mother.
Why?
Just got to pick one.
Yeah, well, you get on better with your father.
I'm more like my mother, I suppose, and there's never a need for too many of us in one room. But any the which way, and I guess it also frames up the reason that I don't have much sympathy for others in that sense, or if people are flaking and being weak, I don't have tolerance for that. And it's not like I'm the big hero, look at me. It's life is about, much of life is about getting used to pain and being very good at dealing with pain. And that's a truth that is flinched from universally. We try and teach kids to avoid pain. But my personal life and view is that the sooner and faster.
But you weren't open about this until... when you were on The Apprentice, for example, it was perfectly possible that you could have had a fit on film.
I was in the evenings. I only had them at night time. I had nocturnal epilepsy, which was a blessing.
Oh, that's a specific thing, isn't it?
So you can, some epileptics only have seizures at night. It's to do with, obviously, the pattern of your sleep and your brain waves.
Mm.
And a certain brain wave will trigger whatever your epilepsy is. So mine would just happen at night and I would call things out. And I remember in the sleeping accommodations at The Apprentice, I used to call out, well done, for a while. Just genius. Well done. Just shout it out in the middle of the night.
Were you sharing a room?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, didn't watch it. Living in Finland.
It's wild. Epilepsy is a wild ride. It is still hugely misunderstood.
Did you have, what's the word for it, sort of dissociative experiences, like weird visions, things like that?
You could feel it coming. So, and as my seizures got worse and went into the daytime, you could feel them coming.
And what did it feel like?
It's just the best way of imagining it for me, and bear in mind this is not the experience of other epileptics, this is just me. If you're on a bridge sometime and somebody else starts walking on another bit of the bridge. And so the bridge starts to move differently.
Mm-hmm.
It's that feeling. So it's almost, so the ground under your feet isn't where it's supposed to be.
Start and wobble, like being on a boat in
like
a storm.
Like that, but there's no explanation for it, because everyone else is fine. It's the strangest thing, and it got to a point where my seizures were supposed to be the end of me. So at 30, it was, when did I get cured? I want to say I got cured at 38. So let's go with that. So 36, maybe, I was told that a seizure, one of these grand mal seizures, would get me. So within 2 years, a seizure would be, that would be the last one. And so I would be on the road and I would text my mum every morning, still here, or all good. And then I would text lovely Mark, my husband, all good, just to let them know that I was, that I'd gone through the night, really.
Oh, goodness me.
And then, so I was told 2 years, and then I was on a wait list for surgery, and the wait list was 3 years, which I think is a sort of brilliantly English piece of, I don't know, socialised healthcare humour. And then I was given surgery, and I stopped having seizures.
I remember the article in the Mail Online about that. Yes, I recall that.
Yeah, it was brutal.
And the pictures.
It was brutal.
So you would, did you...
Because I think when I met you, I had short hair, didn't I?
You did.
So that was the, in the...
Oh, that was, it wasn't like a specific fashion choice. It was because they shaved your hair for the operation. Yes.
Well, in fact, because the surgery, my surgery was one of those Frankenstein surgeries. So they go from the top of this ear in a tram line all the way to here,
mm-hmm.
and then they just split you.
Mm.
So they just pull your face down, and then they saw a hole in the top of your head, which you're welcome to feel actually in a minute.
All right.
And then they take away that big piece of skull, the size of a sort of Jewish head cap, and they go in and get the tumour out.
All right, let's have a look.
So can I ask you not to do a spazzy thing and push?
As non-spasticated as I can.
Okay, I've got a hair slide here, so I'm moving that. So come and put your hand, give me your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the hole in my head.
Oh, my goodness.
That's
me.
A circle. And then if you,
and
can you feel there?
Yeah.
See the soft bit here?
Yes, yes.
Right, feel, hold on. Can you feel it?
The bump.
Move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's me moving my brain. So if I tense my stomach muscles, which is what I was just doing, you can feel my brain squidge.
That was a bit strange.
Yes, like so I'm a little egg.
Feeling the head of, like feeling the head of a dinosaur with a sort of crest on top. That was an interesting.
You felt my brain.
I felt your brain.
I know, that's kind of personal.
So were there side effects to this treatment? I mean, I remember when I met you. I don't know if this was just you being you or if this was you just had treatment. You really snapped at me.
Did I?
And then you sort of apologised.
Oh.
And I remember thinking, what's this? What's going on? What's going on here?
Oh, I may have been under pressure. I was in Oulu, chasing down Muslim grooming gangs, to be fair.
We were sitting in Rosso in Valkia, and I said something or whatever. There was this Austrian woman.
Yes.
And I made some remark, and you said, I wasn't talking to you, I was talking to her.
Mm. There's some pressure.
And I was, all right.
There's some pressure. And then a minute,
you said, sorry about that, by the way. It was just, and it was almost like you knew you'd done something out of character. It's odd.
Well, I would try. I can be very blunt with people, and then I feel like, I wouldn't want them to feel offended by that. I wouldn't want to have caused that person to feel like, oh God, what a cow.
Mm.
But sometimes, like on the road, filming in Oulu or being in Oulu, I was deadly serious what I was trying to do, then I'll shut things down.
Yeah, I remember
really
Eunice, the chap we were with, Eunice and Tina, that couple.
Yes.
And he was constantly filming for his channel. And at one point, you just said, can you just stop filming me, please? We went to the police station.
Well, this will be a little bit about what we're talking about the need to... I genuinely wanted to try and do a job when I was there. Carry along, sorry.
Well, no, yeah. And you had to ask him. I was a bit as well. I don't want to be filming all the time. And I was just walking along the street. And you said to him, I was quite pleased you did. Can you stop filming me?
Mm.
I mean, which he then did.
Yeah.
Then we went to the police station. But it's there is pressure, I suppose. Yeah, you'd been up since early in the morning.
Well, flew to Oulu.
To Oulu.
Not many people do that.
Nah.
To try and find grooming gangs on the streets of Oulu.
No.
So there's elements of pressure, but I can't remember how we got to this other than like snapped at
you. We talk about epilepsy. That's what we're on.
Yeah, but why did we get to me snapping at you?
Because I wondered if it was a side effect of you having recently had operation.
Oh no,
brain.
I was just pissed off at whatever was going on in my life.
Oh, fair enough.
I don't look for excuses in my life. If I've just behaved poorly, that's just me behaving poorly, I think. But so the side effect is that people's brains are magnificent. And, well, so one side effect was that, yeah, I had no hair because I got Lovely Mart to come in and cut it all off because I just had a bare strip here and it was vile. The side effect is that you have an amazing ability. I don't know if you do, because as I called you earlier, Spaz, but you have this peripheral ability to navigate the world by your peripheral, not just a peripheral vision, but this hand, my right arm, knows where it is roughly. So if it wants to reach the camera here, it's got a rough idea where that is, right? Just because of this amazing thing you don't appreciate that you have. So I can navigate the world from this side because that's our ability, but I don't have it here.
Ah.
So all of my left-hand side has lost its periphery. It has no idea where it is. It's just, if I shut my eyes, it doesn't know what's there. And so I go downstairs rubbing against the wall on the right-hand side now.
Oh, I see.
Because I don't want anyone to see that I can't go down as fast as everyone else.
When you raised, my understanding was that you finally came public with this epilepsy issue on a programme I watched, actually, as I recall. I think it was on in Finland and subtitled, where you had to gain weight. and you've been going on about fat people and how they have a lack of control, which, if you've read my book, chaps, How to Judge People by What They Look Like, this is just a fact. And so you said, I will gain weight and I will lose it in order to show that that these people, you can do it if you have a sufficient willpower.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. There's differences in people and how much they put adipose fat, but that's fair enough. And then why did that induce you to admit?
Yes. So the premise was, well, I guess if you live in a socialized healthcare system, you pay for other people's choices. And one of the things I've always believed in is that you own your own nonsense, right? You own your own issues, you own your own pain, you own your own whatever. So I think it's what you and I were talking about earlier. So for fat people, and it was always something I talked about on this morning's sofa or British TV, was fat people need to own the fact they're fat. And if you're fat and you're that's how you've chosen to be, it's nothing to do with me, as long as you don't ask me to pay for it. But under a socialized healthcare system, I do pay for your choices. So TV companies were always asking me, look, what would you like to do? And one day I said, you know what I'll do? I'll prove that fat people are lazy and I will put on 45 pounds, 50 pounds, in 3 months and lose it in 3 months to show that if you want to do something about the way you are, you can. And people always used to say, oh, you're lucky to be skinny. There's some effort and endeavour involved and discipline, you know. So that was the TV program. But what happened was when I lost the weight, I did it without a dietitian, without a gym, without any funding, without any of the excuses people would like to load. Oh, she had a fancy pair of trainers. I just didn't do any of it. So they could, every excuse they had, I wanted to take it away.
Just eat less.
Yeah, but they'll come up with an excuse. They'll tell you, oh, yeah, but you've probably got a personal chef. No. Oh, but you had a gym pass. No. Oh, but you, and that's where the epilepsy came in. The next excuse is always, I'm on medication though. I'm on meds for my, and that really, well, here's my epilepsy medication, guys.
Is that associated with increased appetite?
I don't think it is, but it's just the fact that I don't even know. God knows the epilepsy meds I was on was enough to take out an elephant most days. But the point is the excuse.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for the rational, but it's more the excuse. People will blame anything.
Yes, but I seem to recall that you had trouble putting the weight on.
Yeah, terrible.
Because you were moving about and things.
Just bouncing around.
And then you argued that you said something like, that, was it that this is how I feel in control?
Yes.
By almost like not getting fat or something.
Yeah, well, if my life.
And what's lacking in control is the epilepsy.
Yes. Yes. So trying to get control in my life, I still have traits of this, which I suspect you do as well. So, and I think it relates to being massively on a spectrum around attention, but and the deficit of. But so having things orderly and at home, knowing things are tidy and in order. So in my life, physical training, running faster than other people, all part of structurally keeping me together and sane enough to deal with an overactive head and epilepsy. Yeah. And so having that taken away, trying to film putting on 4 stone, was, I found it to be crucifying, because the thing I relied on was this discipline of being harder, tougher, faster, more brutal.
A certain structure and system.
An obsessiveness almost about discipline. It's why the military calls to my soul. You know, it's pain and it's discipline and it's laughing in adversity, all the things I love. Mm. Being fat and being a victim of whatever it is, I didn't have any of that control either. I hated myself. I hated my life. And in a way it was really useful, because it allowed me for the first time to understand that actually being fat is so, so cruel. You know, there's lots of fat people out there that won't leave their doors of their house, won't go outside, or get to the front door of their house and can't go out of it because they feel too horrible about themselves. And that's mean. That is a horrible trick of life to get you in that position. And I understood it.
You understood it in the almost religious experience sense, viscerally.
Viscerally, for the first time.
Because you'd experienced something akin to it.
Yeah, and I'd sat with people who wouldn't leave their house. Yeah,
but I think you perhaps made the connection between the thing that you have and articulated why you do it.
Yeah.
Self-knowledge, whatever.
Yeah.
And that was hit you.
Yeah.
You seem quite hit by it, even thinking about it.
I am massively affected by all of that, because for the longest time people would say, well, any label you want to put on me, racist, Islamophobic, fattest, sexist, misogynist, you know, we've all been called all the things. But fattest, people say, oh, she hates fat people. And actually the truth of it was, and the truth of me is, I want people to be all right. And often I think, and I adopt the position of knowing better than them what would be best for them, which people find very annoying. But for fat people, I know their lives could be better if they weren't fat.
Probably so, yeah. You talked a number of times. I don't know if this is correct, because I'm getting it off like Wikipedia and online, and it could be wrong. About Lovely Mark.
Yes.
Lovely Mark. And I understand you had a husband before.
Yes, him. Not so Lovely Mark. Not so lovely, Mr. Whatever.
And I understand, I mean, you know, I'm very interested in evolutionary psychology and things like that. And that you mate poached. I mean, he was married to somebody else and you you had an adulterous, or he had an adulterous affair.
Oh, I say.
The heights of romanticism, Gnostic love.
I quite enjoy all of this. Carry along. Shall I sit back while you talk about it?
Yeah, the Gnostic love, the platonic hermaphrodite. I don't know.
Tell me more.
No. I'm wondering about that. So you structure and order and discipline and whatever. But even in our society, even now, adultery is rather, even though it's the most romantic thing, you know, there'd be no poetry if there wasn't adultery, is rather frowned upon. So how did you, as a young lady, get yourself into that kind of situation where you were having an affair with a married man?
Yeah. And I think the only thing that was throwaway about what you said is in this kind of society, it's rather frowned upon. But there's a real specific thing to that, which is it's acceptable for the male. It is completely unacceptable for the female in every way, at every level.
Indeed. And the social consequences for the female are much worse. Oh,
relentlessly
so
worse.
The risk that she's taking in an evolutionary sense is enormous. And it strongly implies either that the payoff is fantastic, i.e. he's a very high status man, let's say, or she's utterly in love with him and they're soulmates and the connection is intense.
Or hung like a donkey.
Or what, perhaps. Or she's got another relationship herself and she wants to get out of it, and how does she get out of it, and that's the way, I don't know, all kinds of things. But what was your situation that you ended up doing something that is so evolutionarily dangerous for a woman?
My situation was that I knew he should be mine, and I knew I would make him mine.
How did you know that? What was it about him that was so potent that you wanted? You knew him?
I knew physically and emotionally that I needed to make him mine.
Why?
Because he just was everything, like all the little bits of me that stick out awkwardly and are strange and odd, which is many. His seemed to be the inlets that allowed me to be in there. So like a little jigsaw puzzle or whatever, without being in any way twee, all the bits of me that were the bits that are incredibly annoying, I know, he had this ability to absorb all those bits and then also make me feel like that was my person. Also, he never seemed available. And even now, however many years on, 20 years on, Mark is the only person on the planet who makes me stop and think before I do something or say something. Doesn't mean I don't do stuff that I want to do. Doesn't mean I don't go to Australia and call out the government and get deported. It just means that in day-to-day life, I think, lovely Mark would say, diddle-diddle, and it's usually wise.
You know, but I thought we were talking about the person with whom you had an affair.
We are, same person. I'm still married to him.
I thought you were married twice.
So, what? No, in the first... Oh, yeah, you're back a story. So I'm on lovely Mark, which was also an affair.
So you've done this twice?
Twice.
You've mate poached twice?
Yes, I'm a double mate poacher. I've just realised that why this is surprising to you. I was already on the second husband. You were on the first one.
Yeah, that's why it didn't make sense to me.
I'm like a cuckoo now.
You're stealing other women's women. Men. Other women's men.
I've never stolen another woman's woman.
No, but
yet.
You've stolen another woman's man. So, all right. So with the first one.
With the first one. Oh, yes. What you said in your examples of why this happened. Power, not financially, although that was also part of his life, but it was that he walked in a room and the room stopped. Everybody knew he walked in a room, and I was like a magnet.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that. I wanted the same as him, and I were similar in that way, but he was at a very high level. So I took him.
Who would you say of the two? They're both called Mark.
No, one was called differently.
Okay, so who would you say out of differently and Mark was more... like your soulmate, more the person that gets you and you get them?
Oh, that's lovely Mark, okay. who I'm with now. The first, differently, as we're calling him, differently was me, same as me. We're the same person.
Well, that's the soulmate then, surely. That's the person, the same as you.
Oh, I see. Well, so we have different interpretations of soulmate then. So my soulmate is lovely Mark, who is the opposite of me.
Right. No, that's not how I would see it at all. The platonic idea is that the hermaphrodite is cut in half and you find someone that is really basically your ontological double.
Ah, whereas I think I found someone who
you click with.
Well, who makes up the other half.
Yeah, that's
me.
A different thing.
Ah, okay, good. I like this explanation.
I think that's interesting as well. That's the difference between what we say, I don't know, paramour material and wife material. That you get a person, or husband material, person that's a jolly nice man and a kind man.
And the kindest.
And a good person to have kids with and a good father and whatever. But he won't necessarily, like, deeply get you. He might be quite different from you.
Yes, exactly that. The opposite of me.
Right. But he's a lovely, kind fellow, right? And then I'm talking about the intensity where the person is the same as you.
Yes, but I think I am not able to live with someone or tolerate even someone who's the same as me. I know it. I have, at some point, I have to force them away from me because it's too much.
How's it too much?
It's too much. There's too much of me in one room. There's not enough room for it. I'm annoying, I'm dominating, I'm loud, I'm obnoxious, I'm demanding, I can be rude and short and all that. You can't have two of them.
He was like
that. Yes.
But did that not mean that there was some level on which he really just knew where you were coming from and got you, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. Yes, I would say that's absolutely true. For 5 years, it was perfectly
true. And that's less true with Lovely Mark?
With Lovely Mark, it's a whole different thing. Yes, it's exactly what you're portraying it to be.
Right. And so there's an intimacy that you would have with Mr. Differently that you, in that sense, would not...
Sort of friction, of chaos, of explosive...
But nevertheless, a profound intimacy.
Yes. There was.
He's not there with Lovely Mark. It can't be, can it?
Well, I think it can be, but I think...
In a different way,
perhaps. Totally, in a different way. That's like comparing angles, you know, with Differently. It's just a craziness. With Lovely Mark, it's absolutely the person that you're supposed to be with, in my head. And maybe that has to do with life as well. At that point, I'm a single mum. I've got two children under the age of two. I don't want to be alone. I do want to be with someone, but I want the person who doesn't do to me what I do to me. So when I was with Differently, ultimately he did to me what I would do to me, which is
he did to you what you do to other people.
Yes. And so of
course
you knew
yourself.
You
knew yourself better. You could predict. You knew it was coming.
Of, of course, you know, my ability to self-detonate, I think, is unparalleled. And I think is uniquely documented by my life. Every single time I reach a point where people go, oh, golly, like you'll get a text from the Prime Minister's sister saying you are killing it, meaning you're doing great. I will self-detonate like no other.
Did he do that? Differently, fellow?
Differently.
Did he behave like that?
He detonated me. We self-detonated. He ran off with someone else, so did to me.
Ah, so it's sort of poetic justice.
Well, some people would say that. I think that's lazy, actually.
It is lazy, yeah, I know, but it's the obvious and cliché thing to say.
But why did you say it then?
I just...
Couldn't be bothered? Want to invest time in the interview? Gave up academically? Turned your brain off? Why? If you don't want to do the interview, just say.
There's some truth in it. There's some truth that it's poetic justice, but what
cool, people say karma.
What did
karma?
You, what did?
I don't think it is poetic justice. I just think if you put two hand grenades together, one of them or both will go off, and that's true.
What did you think about? Did you think about his wife and how she would feel?
Oh, don't ask maudlin questions. No. That you know that I didn't. No, not at all. No. Wasn't my problem. Wasn't my issue. Life was fierce and fast and exciting.
You were quite young.
Yes, 20, whatever, pre-apprentice, 24. I don't know, really fun years. Out of the military, into business, into this consultancy firm, and then propelled like a crazy thing. Before, I was having an affair with the boss, Manhattan, living in East Village, working on Madison Avenue, living with someone else's husband.
How did you get into that from... So it's a degree in, what was it, economics, Exeter, what was it?
Yeah.
And then Sandhurst, obviously.
Sandhurst.
And then unfortunately, that's a... How did you move from there to...
Yeah. So I signed up for the military for 35 years. I told them I'd be their first female general. I told them I didn't want to get married. I told them I didn't want to have kids. And then it turns out I was epileptic, although I also knew that and hid it. So... You know, people can, oh, that's terrible. All they want changes nothing. Came out of there, were forced out, and I'm suddenly back at home without a job and a very specific niche way of A, thinking, B, training, C, being surrounded by the military and knowing that way and knowing it's what I wanted. And there was a firm that was gathering made up of ex-military men, all Royal Marines. And they were doing business consultancy using strategic approaches from the military and applying them to large FTSE 100 companies. And I was really fortunate to get involved with that.
Mm.
And so I became one of them.
Yeah.
And that just sent me off into the business. I had access to business at board levels that I didn't deserve, but I had it because of we were a consultancy. And back in the whatever days, 90s, there was a time when consultancies were the answer to everything. So, yeah, I was living in Manhattan with with someone else's husband and living a fast, explosive, brilliant life.
Oh, was he American, this chap?
No, British.
Oh, okay. And you had two children with him?
Two.
India. wasn't I remember that name.
Yeah.
The name controversy.
Yes, because I was like, I don't like kids with geographical names.
Yes, India is fairly geographical.
Well, to me, it was India Mountbatten, you know, because I'm all about the Raj.
That sounds like an excuse. It was India, sort of geographical name, isn't it? Surely.
Who knows better?
I don't know.
What, between you and I?
No, but how, I know, I mean...
You don't know who knows my child's name better between you and I, because I do know.
Is it geographical, the other one?
Don't be tedious.
Oh, well. Anyway, so it's...
I call my first daughter after India Mountbatten, because I love the Mountbatten family, and I love the time of the Raj. And my second daughter's called Poppy, because our military, Poppy, blah.
Fair enough. No, that is good. That does connect. It does connect.
I'm not asking for your approval.
I'm not approving. I quite... Well, it's difficult with girls' names, though.
It is.
Well, I was... Because I've got a daughter. And for some reason, with the son, I've got a daughter and a son. And with the son, me and my wife just agreed immediately on what name we would call it.
Yeah.
Done. No,
is it Edward?
No, it's not. But if we have a son...
Is it George?
No, it's Henry.
Henry. I'm just getting there. I got it on three. I knew I would get it. I knew.
All right, guess my daughter's name. Much harder, isn't it?
No, hold on. Let me have a moment to think. So I think it will be a biblical reference. It's not Mary, because that would be too weighty. I think it could be... could be Esther. What is it?
You're almost there. You were almost there. Not Mary.
Not Meredith.
No, biblical.
Oh, pardon me.
Not Mary. There's not many other options.
Not Magdalena. Magdalene.
That's her middle name.
What's her name?
Martha.
Martha Magdalena.
Yeah.
So you're not too hard to read for someone like
me. No, that's very good. I'm very impressed. Unless I told you when I met you.
Don't you undermine what I just did. I am very good at reading
people. But it's more
people.
Difficult with girls' names, because there's basically...
Well, I got yours really quickly.
You did.
So.
No, you were very good. That was pretty impressive. Although I do wonder...
That's because you don't trust that I have the intelligence level that I have.
No, I do. No.
What?
No. It's a surprise. But the point is that it is hard. It was hard with girls' names, and we both came up with like a list of what we liked once we knew it was a girl, and we owned, the correlation was like 0.3 or something. I mean, there was only a few names we could possibly agree on, and I don't know why that was, but it is. It's almost like the girl's name, it carries more. I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was strange.
Well, all I know is, so my two, India and Pops, I had Poppy. Let's just do this, for people who really have no time for me and don't know why you're talking to me, actually, and hear my truths and find it shaming and think it's disgusting and have a thousand judgments on me, just go with. I was left in the maternity ward with Poppy, and my husband ran off with his next version of me. So for the enjoyment of those people, that's what happened.
That's less than entirely gallant.
Well, it's what you would say earlier, poetic justice.
It's a nasty kind of poetry.
Yeah, less than entirely
horrible poetry.
Gallant is charming.
The kind of poetry doesn't rhyme.
No.
Carol Ann Duffy or some leftist nonsense.
Exactly. So I had a 10-month-old and a 1-day old.
How could he do that?
Yeah. Because self-detonation, explosive characters, we're not supposed to be together. So the point is, I got a taxi home from the maternity unit. I had two children under the age of two. So, and that was a good life lesson. And then I went on The Apprentice.
That's absolutely appalling.
Well, yeah, but people go with my critics would say, well, you did it. You did it to another man, to another lady's family. So there you go. And there is a lot of...
Are you ready for the future of the West?